people can invest earlier in the infrastructure of organizations, right? I think it does save them money down the road because you don't have to like rip and replace a bunch of processes that don't scale.
Hello, and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, which brings financial reporting, ESG, audit, and risk teams together in one platform. Sometimes investor relations teams, and even designers and writers too. My name is Catherine Tsai. I'm a professional asker of questions, lover of venti soy chais. I'm looking forward to debiting a great conversation, and I'm happy to have you all with us. I'm also happy to have frequent podcast guest Josh Gertsch with us. Josh, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi. How is everyone doing? Yeah. Thanks for having me back. Josh Gertsch. I'm an industry principal here at Workiva. I support our capital markets group and financial reporting. Been at Workiva about 3 years. Before that, I was, kind of a VP of finance for a number of years, controller, and then I spent about my first 10 years in public accounting.
Great. And we are here today with Nick Garastathos.
Thanks for having me on board. My name is Nick Garastathos. I'm the Chief Accounting Officer and Corporate Controller here at Talkdesk. Been in Silicon Valley now for a good part of 10 years. And prior to that, similar to Josh, started off in public accounting for 13 years helping companies go public. And then spent another 10 to 15 years with large multinational public company, global companies. And then about 10 years ago, I decided to make my life interesting and get into this VCPE game and try to scale companies and prove out business models and get them ready for, some turn into be public companies and others turn into be acquired. So
is the plan to take Talkdesk public at some point?
I think that's one of our strategies. You know, no one will ever commit, fully to that. I think when you're in this pre-IPO world, what you're really trying to do is maximize a business model, right? Become, a major player in the space that you work in. And if you're owned by investors, one option to exit is through an IPO strategy and or through acquisition. So you kind of plan for all of the above, and each one of them requires different sort of planning and investment in terms of, going public is a big lift internally versus just being acquired and operating privately. But yeah, it's one of our options.
I'll be looking forward to that. Well, yeah. I have a lot of questions for both you and Josh, so we can dive right in here and we'll probably dig into some of what you just said a little bit more later. Okay. But over the course of your career, and I think you've also been a CFO too?
That's correct. I started off in public accounting, audit side, then got into transaction services, then you got into, capital markets. And then after public, I got into, the controllership world, right? So, the first, to take 2 seconds, you have public accounting is a great experience to build your foundational knowledge of how financials work, right? How to work around a financial statement, what it all means, how it all interrelates in different industries. When you go into industry, now you kind of learn how to actually produce financial statements in a large global environment, right? Managing volume, people, data, operations. And then you take all that knowledge and then you get into where I am right now and you try to blend the two and try to actually help scale companies through operational financial efficiencies, right? And help them grow through different layers of growth, right? Small, medium, large, public, quarterly closes, operational efficiencies in terms of shared office and things like that. So in that journey, you tend to get exposed to not just the accounting side, but you start learning the business. And when you start learning the business, you become a value-added partner to your peer group, where a good path is to a CFO. So I've held a couple of CFO roles, and I've also held a couple of chief accounting roles, and I kind of float between the two.
What would you say is key for helping to build your reputation as someone who helps to drive strategy and not just fill a compliance sort of function?
Yeah, it's to me, I think when you come out of public, they stress a lot, especially if you're on SEC clients, technical expertise. In your early years, you really have to be an expert in really understanding rules and regulations, understanding complex transactions and how to account for that, right? And I think that is very important to kind of build that foundational knowledge when you start. When you now go into corporate and you start having leadership roles, a couple things come into play. One is you really have to understand the business, right? You know, accounting is pretty fungible, right? You can take most accounting roles, depending on the industry, are basically the same. Like AR is AR, AP, payroll, right? Financial reporting. You have differences in RevRec and differences in some financial instruments, but the roles are pretty fungible across industries. What you need to understand is how that business generates revenue, how the process is to get that revenue, how it manages its costs, and how you drive profitability. And if you can understand how a CRO versus a CMO versus a chief product officer all interrelate to try to help that company grow and scale, then with your financial knowledge, you can add value to those teams to try to help them make better decisions. And at the end of the day, you're really trying to help a management team make better choices through data. You really have to really understand the business before people start looking at you as a partner.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not an accountant. So Josh, what would you add in terms of like getting the CFO's ear?
The more you can know the business, plus that background that you have in financials, that can lead to you being a real player, because there are very few people in a company who can do that. Most people don't know the numbers. Most people can't see that, nor do they have the vision of what the numbers mean and what they can lead to. And so I think you have a unique opportunity as an accounting finance professional, you know, get to go in there and mirror those up. And actually, I've seen people that have done it well have become kind of the lead strategists in their company. You know, they're the ones coming forth with new ideas or new opportunities all the time, because they can kind of bring the two worlds together.
I imagine that's especially important if you're a private company looking for investors or getting ready to go public. And Nick, I know you've worked on that quite a bit. What sort of advice do you have for companies that are getting ready to go public, let's say this year?
You know, if you would ask me that question, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, I would have heavily leaned on all the accounting stuff, right? But to kind of zoom out of that, I think the first thing a company needs to assess, right, is how well you do your forecasting. How well can you predict your business, right? So put the technical accounting aside, all the SEC requirements and whatnot. Can you actually forecast your business? And do you know, like when you go through your sales forecast, you're hitting your targets, exceeding them. When you're estimating expenses, you got a good handle of what to expect and what's hitting the P&L. And you can consistently, quarter over quarter, hit your numbers. And I think getting the infrastructure in a company to be able to do that is the bigger lift, right? Because now you're dealing with, you know, what most CAO roles probably handle is all the financial infrastructure needed to handle transactional volume, funnel it, and put it into reportable data that people can use to forecast the business. And data is very hard to wrangle, right? You know, customer cards, product cards, you know, SKUs, you know, you name it, you know, data in a late stage enterprise that's grown with hyper growth probably has a hard time channeling that data. Some startups can get a better handle on it and get their data, you know, organized. So when you get to that point, now you're looking into, okay, all the SEC rules and regulations, the financial statements, the quarterlies, the MD&As, and how do you articulate your business in those documents, right? And technology has actually helped. You know, 10 years ago, you probably didn't have a Workiva, right? You had a bunch of accountants sitting in front of, you know, a set of financials and a fourth part of an S1, you know, and going to drafting sessions and writing stuff in, having printers typewrite stuff and turn it around, right? Now you got tools to help you. You got automation to help you. And the speed of getting information from systems is now just becoming faster, right? And that's all helpful, because I think the speed of how you go public has changed over the years, right? And you can do things a little bit faster if you have the business model to prove it, right? you know, I think if you're sitting in a controllership role, CAO controllership, but someone who is a steward of those financial statements, it's really important to really understand how data comes into your system, how it's reviewed, how it's closed. And when it's closed, it's one and done, right? No issues thereafter. Understanding what drives the business so you can start developing the inroads for proper MD&A disclosures, right? Working with your legal team and all the other elements of a part of a document. And then being able to churn that document with high quality that can be repeatable quarter after quarter, year after year, right? And getting those streams in place to be able to meet SEC timelines is probably where the big lift is from an organizational, not just the accounting team, but from an organization-wide, because to me, I don't think an accounting close is just an accounting-only function. You need the whole organization to feed into a process for you to be able to close with full knowledge of the transactions that are happening, all the contracts, all the potential, you know, risks that might be out there, to be able to articulate that in the set of financials and then walk through that with the auditors.
Yeah. Well, how has the speed of going public changed, would you say?
You know, 20 years ago, it was like the IPO route, right? You get an investment banker, you go through IPO, you do the roadshow, you get the pricing, right? And it takes you several months to do it off, you know, recent financials. Now you got different ways to go public, right? You have direct listing. You have the traditional IPO route. You have SPAC, right? You have,
don't get Josh started.
Yeah, you have all these avenues to go and access capital. I think the common denominator of all of them is whether or not your business can go and get that access to capital. The question is whether your infrastructure can withstand an SEC level process and timing, right? Is the control environment robust enough to withstand audit scrutiny, right? Disclosure. Do you have detection risk because your processes aren't fully baked to understand whether or not you're missing significant transactions, right? So building that infrastructure, you know, is a lift, which I think sometimes in the speed of going public and accessing capital markets is probably minimized to a degree. Like, you know, we'll catch up to it. But there's ramifications from an investor to go public and then have restatements and have material weaknesses, right? And people shouldn't lose that focus. What's really hard is, you know, how do you educate an organization, an executive group, to really understand the control side, the process side, the financial integrity side of issuing financials and getting support and resources and financing to support that and articulate that into a strategy where you can work with the business to, you know, get the support you need and covering that side of risk for the company without, you know, over time versus trying to do it all last minute, which I think is what kind of happened to a lot of SPACs. They went public, they didn't have the infrastructure, and, you know, and then, you know, either the business model started to fail or the control environment started to fail. And then you just saw all these, you know, all these restatements and control weaknesses pop up for a lot of them.
I think on SPACs, they're a vehicle of the past. I think people are staying away from them. The one thing they gave in the past was a lot of speed to this process. But I think to your point, Nick, what happened was, you know, the business models weren't vetted enough, so the valuation suffered. And then, you know, obviously we saw the, you know, with the control environment failing, we saw the regulators kind of step in and be like, you know, make sure they shored that up. And by doing so, it took the benefit of speed out of it. And so now there's not much of an advantage to really kind of going down that road. I mean, it's still going to be a vehicle. It's still going to exist, but it's just not going to be as popular. I think the other thing that's interesting is I think when you go look at raising capital, you know, to your point, Nick, there's a cost of capital. Whether you go and, you know, you want to sell equity in your company and raise it through, you know, funds or different money, whether you want to go public or whether you want to kind of go borrow it from a bank, you know, I think you have to look at your strategy, how much money you're trying to raise, figure out the cost of those options. But I think there are quite a few intangible costs going into it that you don't realize. Like, are we going to up level the company to operate at that level with that kind of scrutiny on us? I think, you know, That's a hard one to calculate, how quantitatively what the impact of that is, and I think that's a challenge. I think the other thing that's changed maybe over the last 10 years on IPOs is I think it was already heading that way, but I think the pandemic kind of really accelerated a couple things. It made it back in the day, you used to get in a room, everyone used to huddle up in this boardroom, do your due diligence, you've got this box, you're dropping all the paper in, you're drafting filings, you're going through all these sessions. That doesn't happen anymore. Like, a lot of this is done virtually. You don't have to all be in one location. It's eased up the flexibility on kind of the deal teams and how they come together. They don't have to be as local, or they don't have to be on site. And I think it's kind of changed the talent, what I would say, like talent optimization of going public. Like, and if I need somebody to come in and help me get ready, I mean, they don't necessarily have to like live in my backyard at this point.
Yeah, but that also applies to just accounting teams in general, right? We're fully remote, right? So my team is scattered globally, right? I really don't have a concentration of more than one or two more than two members in a particular state, right? So you're already operating in a remote environment, throwing on the complexity of a deal, working with, remote people giving you advice. And I think it's, to Josh's point, it's really important to really understand where you need the help, right? That you don't have internally, how to get it, and how to interact with that team with speed, because there are tools like, Workiva is a tool, right?
Wait, did he just say Workiva? That's right. Workiva can help you pull together an S-1 for an IPO or secondary offering faster. Check it out at workiva.com/capital-markets. Now, back to Nick.
There are tools now that you don't need to be in a room and go through diligence. You can use, the software. You can use, there's AI coming out that helps you draft financial statements from your GL, right? There's all these tools now that are accelerating the data compilation of things, but you still need knowledgeable, CPAs, technical people, SEC, knowledgeable people to, look at those financials and making sure they comply with rules and regs, making sure it properly articulates the business, making sure it aligns with company policies, and making sure you have infrastructure that helps you close time and time again with accuracy and compliance, right? And that's where it shifts from private to public is there is that cost that Josh mentioned. The cost of going public is significant, right? And some, and I've been with some PE firms that, going public's not their number one option. If, especially pre-21 when valuations were nice, right? Everyone was kind of focused on growth, right? You could sell a viable business that generates cash and or is growing tremendously, make a good exit out of it without building an SEC infrastructure, because you didn't need to do that. Now it's changed. Now a lot of these growth companies are trying to turn into profitable companies, right? And the valuations are lower. So, an IPO route is probably, an option. You only saw a few of them go this past year. The markets aren't exactly all that favorable right now, because the transition going from growth to profitability is a transition, especially when you never really put in those gates as a growth company to manage spending, which I think also is an opportunity for controller CAOs or even CFOs that listen to this is, how do you steward a company to accelerate growth while maintaining good expense management, control, cost control? And many of them, if they haven't been through it, I've been through some cycles in my career, so you kind of seen the ups and downs. But if you started your career in like 2010, you haven't experienced a down cycle until now, right? So it's for some people, it's going to be new, right? And how do you make hard calls? So I think that's a real business risk right now that you see a lot of companies go through.
I have a whole list of follow-up questions from what you and Josh just mentioned. So what's the benefit to having SEC-ready reporting, even if you're a private company?
If people haven't faced it, they will in this journey. Is management has an insatiable appetite for financial data. Okay. So the moment you close a quarter, by day one, what's my revenue at? What do my numbers look like, right? And so you're going to be under constant pressure to close faster, right? To really look at the efficiency of a close. You're also going to be, if you are looking to go public, you also have to think about press releases, communication to a market, right? And those individuals need information faster. You also have to give information to your auditors. So I think, you know, teaching a team that, you know, your close is going from whatever it is, 8, 10, 12, 14 days to something, you know, south of, you know, 5, right? Is a lift, right? Where are the inflows of information? Hard closes, soft closes, materiality, SOX compliance, right? You know, key accounts. You got to dig into all that. And it doesn't happen overnight, right? You know, so for me, I try to, you know, do it through a tiered program. If we're at, you know, private 15 days, okay, let's try to get it to 12. Let's then try to get it to 10. Let's try to get it to 8. Probably look at south of 10. You then have to go out into the org to get them acting differently. So you get data faster so you can close it up and get your close done. And that's, you know, that's a learning, that's a process, that's a culture shift, that's a lot of different things to turn an engine to do something better, faster, and quicker.
Access to capital requires financials, access to capital or opportunities requires, you know, financials. That's kind of the backbone to kind of initiate a lot of those things. So whether you're trying to raise capital, whether you're trying to look at opportunities, strategic opportunities out there, maybe it's acquisitions, maybe things like that. The quicker that you can have numbers that you can rely on, the more advantageous it is to you to take advantage of opportunities. I think the challenge with not like in reporting, I think, you know, the one thing at reporting like an SEC company is you have to get that muscle memory down where not only do you have to do it faster, but you have to do it right. And it has to be able to be relied upon. And anytime you do that, and anytime you get that down, the sooner you have that information, like that's the crux of all financial decisions, you know, like financials from there, they can be sliced and diced and look at about 100 different ways and perceptions and views. But that core set of financials, you know, is kind of the leader of information used to make a lot of those kind of what I would say strategic decisions or, you know, higher level decisions.
Right. And equally as important, if you do that with speed, but the quality is not there, and then next thing you know, you're starting changing numbers.
Yeah, you only get to mess up about, I mean, you don't even get to mess up once, and then you have no credibility, and then, you know, things are, then people, you know, you lose that trust, investors can walk away, opportunities can walk away if like you just don't, there's just very slim margin of error on it, I think.
And I think for the controller CEOs out there, the hardest part in that journey is sometimes you got to stand your ground and say, these numbers aren't ready, despite the pressure of, I need them, right? You know, educating, you know, CFO, CEO, understanding the risks, right? Communicating those risks. And if people decide to take the risk, that's one thing. But you have to be vocal about, you know, where you are in the process as to not just deliver stuff that you know is not right.
You know, over the years, over the course of your career, I'm sure a lot has changed in the accounting and finance profession. Is there anything that hasn't changed that you hope could change? What would you change, Nick?
I think what I would like to change, and it's hard, is for those pre-IPO companies, is how do you get investors to invest in that back office, right? To scale with the company and not view it solely from a cost-benefit analysis and get that investment done earlier. And I think when companies are trying to prove out business models, they're not going to invest a lot in systems and process, right? They're going to probably throw some bodies at it, you know, give me numbers, that's all I need for now. And then they go through hyper growth, right, as some companies experienced during COVID. And then also now you got to have a back office to catch up. And now you need a bigger check to, you know, to put the infrastructure necessary to support a wider org. So if people can, you know, if people can invest earlier in the infrastructure of organizations, right, I think it does save them money down the road because you don't have to like rip and replace a bunch of processes that don't scale.
Back office needs love too.
Yeah, exactly. in all facets, you know, our HR and legal brothers and sisters, right? And any back office that requires, you know, the process of volume of transactions, whether it's headcount, whether it's contracts, right? Anything that needs, you know, assistance and, you know, and getting through volume does require some investment.
I think you just made a bunch of new friends by saying that.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I appreciate your time on the show today. Before we let you go, we do ask a closing question of the day.
Okay.
And okay, so you don't have to name names, but of all the places that you've worked, do you have a favorite workplace, and why is that the one that you're calling out?
You know, it's an interesting question because I think, you know, I like where I am right now, right? But what I like where I am right now is that I'm at a level where I can affect change. I find fun in the build and the growth, right? And dealing with the ups and downs of scaling a company, right? And, you know, it's not for the weary, right? It's really a transition. But, you know, that comes from a culmination of various experiences. Coming out of school, I think a public Big Four environment was the best thing at the time, right? You know, those environments, you know, really lean heavy on development, right? From a technical leadership, you know, industry perspective, that is very hard to find that outside of Big Four. So if you get into the profession, you know, those environments are really excellent to help you grow professionally, right? And then what you realize coming out of that is, you know, every company has a different personality. Like I said earlier, accounting is accounting, but when you look at companies, try to find companies that kind of fit your personality, your style, right? And if you're successful in doing that, you will have fun where you're at. And I'm having fun right now where I am.
That's good to hear.
Yep.
Josh, I don't know if you have a favorite workplace.
I would say, I mean, similar thing. I think the culture is important. Like, you want to find somewhere that fits your personality. I do think there's something about public accounting that I think it gives you the most opportunities you can. I think it toughens you up. I think you have to deal with a lot of stresses that probably don't exist anywhere else outside of that environment, like working in a type A environment, working, you know, 60 to 90 hours a week, doing that for, you know, Nick, you were there too, doing that for a decade. It can take a toll on person. But when you walk away from that, you might have been there 10 years, but you probably have about 20 plus years of experience, at least in the financial side. Like, you have a degree of expertise that probably is very hard to match out in the market. And so I think, you know, from that side, I miss the type A's. I miss the drive, like, not necessarily like the competition, but like everybody is there and nobody is like a low player. Like, everybody can do the work and everybody can go. And when you get that many high value type A people together, you can really do some damage on something. So I think from public accounting, I miss that. I don't miss a lot of the other stuff, but, I think on the culture side, going somewhere that fits, like somewhere, I mean, I echo about everything Nick said, is like, hey, you want to find somewhere that fits your personality, where you can be you. Because if you can be you and you can bring expertise and you enjoy that, you can really add value to an organization that's very fulfilling to you. I think on a fun side, like when you find cultures like that, I remember, you know, we used to have accounting and finance and legal, you know, downstairs, and you know, everybody else goes home at 5, but the back end office functions or the deal team, we were always working on stuff. And so we had some pretty intense Nerf gun wars down there late at night. And to the extent that people were buying like automatic machine Nerf guns on Amazon and things like that. But just having that camaraderie and things like that, like, I think it's a matter of finding the right culture is a big deal.
Awesome.
Good point.
Well, thanks again, Nick, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. It was a pleasure. I appreciate you joining us.
And thank you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. I'm Catherine Tsai. You heard Josh Gertsch. This has been Off the Books, presented by Workiva. Please subscribe, leave a review, tell your buddies if you liked the show. You can always leave us a comment if you're watching this on YouTube, or feel free to drop us a line at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.